In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh, my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Welcome back to another Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, it is so good to be here. I get to stare at this man's beautiful face. It's been a minute, Mitch. It has been a minute.
I thought you were talking about Malik. You had Malik back up on the wall.
No, this month is August, and it is what's his face? Steven and a little puppy named Ginger. He's not that attractive. I mean, that's actually kind of disappointing.
Oh, that's a bummer. But yeah, it is good to see your face, my friend. Took some time away, tabled this a little bit, and we're ready to get back at it. We're ready to get back at it, I think.
Yeah, we are, because football season is here. It kind of stuck up, right? I mean, like, all of a sudden, it's preseason. We're like, in this, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. We're like, a month away from opening night. I mean, this is happening. So what a better time for us to bring back the show, to gear up and get ready for this NFL season. And we've got a ton of NFL stuff today, basically. That's what this show is. We're gonna be talking NFL coming up in the next couple weeks. We're going to do our Megasode NFL preview, as we've done before. We're going to do, awards predictions. We're going to do a ton of stuff and get ready for this NFL season. And I cannot wait.
I can't wait either, man. I have missed you so much.
I missed you too. I feel out of place. You're wearing your Bears jersey. I don't know why I'm not wearing my Panthers jersey.
Go put it on real quick.
I don't know how I messed this up, guys.
Well, stand by.
I can't hear. I'm talking.
I even got my Bears visor on, man. Come on. Found out I'm a visor guy, by the way. Well, I think I'm a visor guy. I might not be a visor
it's
guy.
What's happening?
Ugh. Oh, there it is.
Wardrobe change.
Hey, speaking of Bears Panthers, before we move on.
Now I'm here. Guys, what a beautiful sight. Speaking of Panthers and Bears, Mitch, preseason, game one. And guess who got to play last night? Our Panthers and Bears at Soldier Field.
Yeah. Don't get too excited. Don't get too excited. If the Bears were playing with a full starting defense, Cam Newton would not have been able to stick to his celibacy promise throughout the course of the season because he would have been bent over the barrel.
Oh, wow.
So,
well, good thing they nor Cam played last night. It's all the backups. Yeah. It's all the scrubs, which is fun. But listen, I don't care if it's preseason. This clearly shows that the Panthers are a better team than the Bears. I mean, it's just, that's –
Oh, clearly. Yeah. Clearly this shows that. Yeah.
Listen, I do want to mention a few things from that game last night. As our David Montgomery, I will give you, looked pretty good. He looked pretty good. And Chase Daniel looked like a pretty competent backup, which, backup quarterback is very underrated in the NFL. A good backup can save your season. So that was probably reassuring for the Bears side of it. Brian Burns, our first round pick for the Carolina Panthers, played a total of 10 snaps and he had 2 sacks. And I'm on the Carolina Panthers subreddit today. And somebody was like, if you equated this out to the amount of snaps that like Reggie White had in his whole career, Brian Burns would end up with like 3,000 sacks. It was some like ridiculous number. And I was like, he's obviously the greatest of all time already, right? I mean, this is like, we can kind of just like cut scene. It's already determined. There's a lot of things I liked from last night, but just fun to watch. I was watching it on my phone. Fun to watch football again.
Yeah. I was having serious withdrawals. I was going down to community centers trying to get my little fix. Of football.
Mitch is out here watching Pop Warner practice, just like
Yeah, with like with the beer hard hat, watching Pop Warner football practice. I was sad when football left last time because the season ended on such a sour note. I was like, it can't end this way with this crappy Super Bowl we got. But it's back. It's time to redeem. The NFL has to redeem itself from this terrible Super Bowl. And it's now's the time to do it. Football's back. Let's go.
I equally as excited. Mitch, let's talk about some of these NFL news, some of the stuff going on right now. The big one, my favorite.
Can I do it?
Oh, Mitch, I totally forgot. It's been too long. Go ahead.
Oh, let's get into the nose.
Ow-hoo-hoo! Mitch, I totally forgot it's been that long. It has been that long, my friend.
Oh, I felt beautiful. I've been holding that in for a month and a half. You know that?
It's building up inside. All right, Mitch, let's start with the first bit of news. My favorite bit of news, Antonio Brown got frostbite. He no longer has his feet. They are gone. He has stubs where the feet were and can no longer play football. What a crazy story.
Like, how do you not know not to wear – how do you not know? Like, just don't wear socks in a cryogenic chamber. Like, they're going to make you very, very cold. You probably shouldn't wear your socks and get them wet. like, he might as well have gone hiking, like snow hiking barefoot, like, or in his socks. Like, that's what he might as well have done. And, I mean, we've all seen the picture by now. It's disturbing.
It's not good.
It's disturbing. It's nightmare fuel. in the most vague way that, like, NFL reporters could get, I heard that John Gruden was, quote, not happy about the situation.
Wow. Shocking.
Like, okay, I know John Gruden didn't just say he wasn't not happy. Give me the deets. I want to know what square words did he drop. Come on. Or just the parentheses. Words are hard. I'm so excited to be back. Words are getting hard. Parentheses, like expletive. Just do that for me. I know John Gruden's pissed off about it. There's actually just a report today that said he's going to be back in the near future. So looking like he'll be back for week one. So, but yeah, just a careless move by Antonio Brown. You have to take care of your body, especially going into a new organization. Like you have a reputation already, but you still have something to prove here. So, I mean, take care of your body. Don't come into it with frostbite on your feet.
Yeah, that's, you know, here's what I think is so great about this story. I don't think there's ever been a news story in the NFL like this. I don't think we've ever heard of somebody getting frostbite in August. I mean, maybe if it's January at Lambeau Field, and then maybe, you know, all right, I can kind of see that. But no, it is literally August. Guys are sweating out there on the field, and Antonio Brown has frostbite. I mean, what an amazing piece of content to talk about. He seems like he will be okay, ready to go for the season, which is good news for the Raiders, good news for fantasy football. This is a guy I'm kind of eyeing in my fantasy football draft this year. So I was like, uh-oh, that's not good. I don't feel good about that. Seems like everything's okay. But a weird turn of events and another thing to add to what is a weird – borderline dysfunctional franchise in the Oakland Raiders.
You know, I just want him to stop his frostbite ways because Tony Toe Taps is going to quickly become Tony Two Toes, and we don't want to see that. No one wants to see that.
Oh man! All right, Mitch, we have a couple of holdouts right now. Obviously, Lev Bell last season was holding out the whole season. That was kind of a mess. We have two different situations from Lev Bell, different from each other. One, let's start Ezekiel Elliott, holding out right now from the Dallas Cowboys. He wants a new contract, and it seems to me that this one is pretty likely to get fixed. Jerry Jones doesn't want to pay the price for Zeke, but I cannot see this going into the regular season. But for now, he is not playing and are participating. And I know from a fantasy football perspective, it is worrisome, especially if you were eyeing a guy like that at the top of the draft. But a weird situation with Zeke down there in Dallas.
Yeah, I'm not as optimistic as you. I see this as pretty similar to the Le'Veon Bell situation, where they want to keep him, but they don't want to spend the money on him. And Zeke has the leverage here. Zeke could actually sit out the whole year without any penalty. So he has the leverage here. The thing is I think we saw it with Le'Veon Bell, running backs just aren't going to get the money that they want. Like, it's just – they could set a bar. Le'Veon Bell set a bar, and he still didn't get what he was really looking for.
Right.
And even a guy as young and as talented as Zeke Elliott, running backs just aren't going to get that. And I think it's foolish for them not to try to work out something if he wants to stay in Dallas. It'd be foolish for him not to try to work something out. But I think, like what we saw with the Le'Veon Bell situation, this works if you hold out for a full year. And so if he feels like it's necessary, go for it. But I'm not as optimistic. I could see him missing a substantial part of the regular season and really screwing with the Cowboys' regular season hopes this year.
Yeah, here's the thing. Every situation is different. Every holdout, you know, isn't exactly the same. But if you're Dallas and you don't have Zeke Elliott, what do you have?
Well,
what are the Dallas Cowboys this season without Ezekiel Elliott?
Dak Prescott and everyone else.
Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper, and that's it? Like, that's a really bad team. The thing with the Steelers is Le'Veon Bell was part of this Killer Bees trio, right? With Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, and then Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell was arguably not even the best player on the team. I mean, Antonio Brown, you can make the argument, was a better player. So to have him hold out, you know, it's like, okay, I can understand the Steelers not wanting to invest that money there, but the Cowboys don't have anybody else. I mean, Dak Prescott is as good as he is because he has Ezekiel Elliott. And they don't have a James Conner type. Maybe Tony Pollard is James Conner. And they, like, you know what I mean? Maybe that's what they – and maybe the situation, that's why they're comfortable letting him sit out. But I just see the Cowboys having a much bigger need to get this guy on the field. He is their identity. He is the team. And that is different than Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell wasn't the Steelers, but Zeke is the Cowboys. And so I don't see them not getting this done.
You're right. Zeke Elliott, you know, without Zeke Elliott, what are the Cowboys? I mean, they're just Dak and a bunch of other faces. I worry about it because of Jerry Jones' bullheadedness and what he thinks different players are worth. And so that's what kind of worries me a little bit about them actually getting a deal done. And maybe that might be the majority of it. Well, I guess the sooner we get, you know, and the more we hear from this, maybe feelings will change. But I really think the bullheadedness of Jerry Jones is also going to be something that's going to get in the way of getting something done here.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're seeing now with the fact that it hasn't been done yet. They haven't taken care of this. There is an issue here, and I think that's, you know, coming from both sides, both the owner and Zeke Elliott. Let's talk about the other holdout right now, which is Melvin Gordon. It's a very different situation for him in Los Angeles with the Chargers. He is holding out. In fact, his agent has requested a trade, which is pretty interesting. All right, guys. So while we're recording this right now, we got some news on the Antonio Brown situation, which has nothing to do with his frozen feet. This is a whole other thing. Mitch, how about you share what we know?
So Antonio Brown's been wearing a helmet that has been having concussion issues in the league. It's been banned. He just told the Raiders that he'll never play football again if he can't wear his old helmet. What a dumbass. What a dumbass. Like, he can't be serious, can he? Like,
he's filed.
Be serious.
He's filed a grievance with the commissioner's office, stating that he should be able to play with this helmet. I think this is serious. This is, guys. This is
breaking. AB might retire.
Oh my God.
What is going on?
Guys, when I mentioned borderline dysfunctional Oakland Raiders earlier in this podcast, this is what I meant. They traded for this guy. They gave up assets for this guy. And this
Who could have seen this happening, though? Like, let's not put it all on the Raiders here.
Listen,
like,
it's the this Raiders. Is like, kind of stuff just happens. It's a, you can't
stuff
predict.
Just that. Happens.
It just happens. Stuff happens.
It's not their fault, but gosh damn it. Like,
oh, man.
What an idiot.
Wow, I take back everything I said about worrying about him as a fantasy player. Definitely worry now. Don't draft Antonio Brown. He may retire. Oh, man.
If he retires because of this, does he lose? Like, how much respect does he lose from you?
Oh, all of it. All of it. 100%. You're going to retire because you can't wear a helmet?
Oh, no. He loses 173% of my respect, like, by far. Oh, God. That's just terrible.
Wow. We'll follow this and see where it goes, but what a weird thing.
We'll keep you updated, man. we'll keep you updated via the Instagram story. We got to get back up to posting on that. And that's going to be the quickest way you guys can see it. So as soon as we know, we'll let you folks know. Make sure to go follow us on Instagram at the Sports Hour Guys. How do we move on from that?
All right, we were about to talk about Melvin Gordon. So let's talk about that now.
Let's do that.
He is holding out just like Zeke. His situation is a little bit different. His agent has reportedly requested a trade from the Los Angeles Chargers because they don't believe they're going to get the contract they believe Melvin Gordon deserves. Mitch, I have a ton of issues with this holdout specifically. One, Melvin Gordon is not this type of player to be able to pull the power move of a Lev Bell, of a Zeke Elliott. Melvin Gordon is a great running back. Don't get me wrong. He's a top 10 running back in the league. But the guys who can pull this off have to be at the tippy top, you know, top three level guys. And Melvin Gordon is just not there. He's had injury issues. He hasn't been able to stay healthy. Can you blame a team for not wanting to invest $15 million plus a year into a guy who can't play 16 games? He has to understand who he is and what a team is bringing on by signing him to that kind of contract. And he has to be more reasonable, but he's not. And he wants to trade. And I don't think anybody wants to trade for him.
No. And you said the magic words there. If he could play 16 games, he hasn't done it yet. I mean, he might've done it once in his career, but it's hard to justify paying a guy that much if he's only on the field three quarters of the year for you. If he was on the field 16 games a year, year in, year out, I'd have no problem playing him $15 million a year. But that's not the facts. Fact is, he can't stay on the field. There are three guys right now that can do this type of move. Lev Bell, and he already did it. Zeke, and he's doing it right now. And Saquon, and he's not quite there yet.
And he may do it when his time comes.
And he may do it when his time comes.
You know,
those are the three that can do it. I think you can make an argument McCaffrey could do it.
Right. He's kind of that.
You can make an argument Kamara could do it.
Right. Those guys are kind of up next. But
that's even borderline for me. That's even borderline for me because of the player type that they are. And there seems to be a lot more of their type of player in the league now. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. He doesn't have any leverage. He's even if he holds out, if he wants to be a free agent, not this next postseason, but the postseason after, he has to come back after 8 games. He has to come back by game 9. He doesn't have any leverage here. And the only leverage he has is that he hopes he gets traded. And I don't know who takes him.
There's not a lot of teams that need a running back or that are willing to take on the type of money that he is wanting. I kind of thought
Houston.
That was the one team. But they came out and said, listen, we're looking for running backs, but we're not looking for a top-tier guy. We're looking for a third-down back. And they just traded for Duke Johnson from Cleveland to be that guy to balance out Lamar Miller as their starting running back. So, yeah, it's like you look across the board. Who's paying that kind of money out? Nobody. They either have a guy that they're okay with, or they're willing to just running back by committee, or they're trying to conserve cap space. There are not a lot of situations Melvin Gordon's going to find a place. And so this one makes no sense to me.
I've heard this a couple times. I want you guys that are hoping and praying that this happens. Melvin Gordon's not going to the Chiefs. One, you wouldn't trade inside your own division. And two, the Chiefs would have to give up a ton in cap space just to fit him. So for those of you believers, and I've heard it from a few different sources, oh, man, the Chiefs would be a great fit for him. Yeah, but it's probably one of the most unrealistic.
100%.
It would be a great fit for him, but it'd be super unrealistic.
Because yeah, here's the thing. This is a team that just traded away Dee Ford.
Right. Yeah.
To not have to pay him a lot of money. I mean, they have money invested in certain places, and running back is not one of them. Definitely not. So yeah, very unlikely scenario. For very unlikely he gets traded in general. I don't know what he's gonna do. But he looks like a fool right now. He just looks like a fool.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it all plays out. But for fantasy perspective, obviously, we hope these get resolved here soon so that when your fantasy draft comes up, you can know Melvin Gordon, Zeke will be there and they're playing and we can draft them accordingly. If not, those guys who are both first round picks become very interesting.
Right.
We'll have to see how it all plays out. But that's about it for running back holdouts. Mitch, there's one more bit of news that we wanted to talk about, and that is that the New York Yankees and the Chicago White Sox will be playing a baseball game next year at the Field of Dreams in Iowa. They are building a baseball stadium, 8,000 capacity, in the middle of a corn field. This is amazing.
This is by far the coolest thing that's going to happen in baseball over the next year. There's no competition. It'll be the coolest thing that happens in baseball. Field of Dreams, by the way, one of my favorite all-time movies. Not just sports movies, all-time movies. All time. I mean, the storyline behind it, and it really gets you in that baseball mode. The lore behind the game, if you will. Field of Dreams is a real place in Iowa. It's been a real place for a long time. People can come visit it, and now they're holding an MLB game there. This is going to be so flipping cool, man. And really, two fitting teams to be there. Two of baseball's most historical teams, the White Sox and the Yankees. Two very fitting teams to be there. So this should be a very, very fun treat for fans next year in Iowa.
Yeah, I think this is super fun. What a great idea. I started thinking, I was like, what other kind of things like this could we do in sports? Like, does the MLB come to Utah and film at the Sandlot? Do they play a game? Can we play a game at the Sandlot? I know where it is. It's not that far from my house here in Utah. Like, can we renovate that? Play a game here? Like, what, you know, like, what?
How cool would that be? That right. Play a game in the Sandlot.
I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, what other, this is such a cool idea. And I hope that there are ways to do this in other capacities and other sports. Like, I don't know. I just, this is so much fun.
You know what the NBA should do is just replace all the hoops with peach baskets.
I hate that idea, but that's okay.
Well, that was just an idea. Just an idea.
Tried it out. You know, just threw it out there. I'm going to send it right back.
We'll scrap it.
But all I want to know is, what's the ticket price? What are the ticket prices? There's 8,000 seats. Do they have to be at least a grand, right?
This is going to be an expensive ass game.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, at least $1,000 for a seat.
You want to go?
will you guys sponsor us to go to this game? We'll live stream.
We need sponsors, guys. We need to go. We will cover live from the Field of Dreams if you send us there.
I love it.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. No, I thought that was super cool. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's going to be the best thing in baseball next season. What a fun bit of news here. So.
Oh yeah. Just super cool. Super cool, man.
All right, Mitch, I think that's about it for the news. And now, Mitch, I think it's time for the best segment on this show.
Well, yeah, when it's not NBA season, it's the best segment on the show, because apparently you have the most popular segment between the male demographic of ages 18 to 34. But I have the most popular segment between female between the ages of 55 and 89.
Yes.
Factual, I have that accurate demographic on lock. So let me ask you a question, Dallin. Records, are they meant to be broken?
Some are meant to be broken. Others, I don't think so.
Is it that they shouldn't be broken or they can't be broken?
I don't think it's a shouldn't thing. I think any record is able to be broken. I just think there are some records that just won't.
Yeah. Well, on this week's edition of Mitch Most Top 5 List of the Week, we are going to be talking about some unbreakable records, but not just any unbreakable records. The top 5 worst unbreakable records in sports. Records you don't want to break.
Okay.
You don't want to break them. I would hope for humankind's sake that they stay unbroken, because these are monstrosities of records. Let's go to our honorable mentions to start. So technically, number 7 on my list would be the 2011 and 2012 Charlotte Bobcats 7-59 record.
Ooh, yeah.
Owned, ironically, by the GOAT, Michael Jordan at the time. They were playing in a strike-shortened 11-12 campaign. It was 63 games long. They won 7 of them. Just terrible. By the way, they were led in scoring by Gerald Henderson at 15.1 points per game, followed by DJ Augustine, who was second in scoring at 11.1 points per game. This team is absolutely awful. They just barely edged the 9-win Philadelphia 76ers of 72-73, who went 9-73 in a 82-game season. So, wow. One honorable mention. This one almost made the list for me. I kept it off because technically it is beatable. I just don't ever see it happening again. This is going to be the Buffalo Bills' 4 straight Super Bowl losses.
Ooh.
One of the great dynasties in football history. Unfortunately, one of the great tragedies in football history, because they never won a Super Bowl out of it. Big names like Andre Rison, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas. These guys were superstars. Don Beebe was another receiver on that team. Big names that never got it done in the big game and actually lost 2 of them on missed field goals to win it. So it's just an absolute tragedy that team never won a Super Bowl. If they win even a couple of those Super Bowls, we might be looking at a very different Buffalo Bills franchise today.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a perennial contender if they win a couple of those. So, but by the way, all Super Bowls aside, those are my 2 honorable mentions. Let's get into the list. At number 5, we are going to start with Brett Favre's 336 career interceptions. Now, number 5 on my list, because technically – could be broken in today's game, especially a pass happy game. There could be a guy that comes in with a similar skill set as Brett, very feast or famine. He could light it up for 6 touchdowns in a game, or he could turn that lighter all the way down to 0 and throw about 6 picks a game. And that was Brett Favre's style. But nonetheless, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He just happens to lead all time in interceptions at 336. Like I said, so let's look at, he led the league in interceptions thrown in 93 with 24, in 2005 with 29, and in 2008 with 22.
That is 29 interceptions in a season.
Hey, he's, like I said, feast or famine, man. The guy was really, especially later in his career, he was either really good or really bad. He's still a top 5 quarterback of all time on my list, just because of his way to improvise plays, his creativity. Also, he has over 500 career touchdown passes. So, but the interceptions, a big, big thing. He recorded double-digit interceptions in every season except one, which was 2009, when he tossed just 7 picks, and he was playing for the Minnesota Vikings at that point. So, Brett Favre, 336 career interceptions, number five on the list. Number four, in this one, I had a hard time. I wanted to put higher. I just couldn't. Number four, the title of this one is just 222-0. Let me give you the story. So Cumberland College was playing Georgia Tech in a baseball game. And they knew they were going to have a tough time beating Georgia Tech. So what they did, and this is 1915 at the time, but they went out and they hired a bunch of minor league base players to play for their college baseball team undercover and wound up beating Georgia Tech 22-0 in this baseball game. What they didn't account for was that Georgia Tech would find out and they'd be pretty pissed about it. Not only would they be pissed, they'd piss off the head coach. And it wasn't just any head coach. It was head coach John Heisman. Yeah, that Heisman, the guy the trophy is named after. He found out about it, got really pissed. They happened to have Cumberland College on their schedule in 1916 for football. He went on to score 222 points on this team in one game, shut them out. There's actually a book written on accounts taken from that game where players are actually fleeing the field in fear because their destruction was so terrible. John Heisman also calculated it out to beat them exactly by 222 to add an extra two on to that 22-0 win in baseball.
Wow.
That is
such a cool story.
It is the worst defeat in college football history, obviously. That's
got to be the worst defeat, like, in all sports history. Like,
it's pretty bad.
You know what I mean? Like, that is insane.
And if my memory's not failing me here, Cumberland's football program folded before the end of that season.
Probably before the end of the game.
I believe at the end of that game, it folded.
Yeah, at halftime, they're like, all right, time to, yeah, we'll never do this again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
it was terrible. Absolutely terrible. Number three on the list, we're going to go to the ageless wonder, and I'm not talking about Bartolo Colon. I'm talking about Jamie Moyer. Career home runs allowed. He pitched 25 years in majors. I mean, an iron horse. Guy just kept going and going. His problem is he gave up the long ball a little bit too much. And he gave up a home run 522 times in his career. Now, that number may be staggering by itself, but what if I told you that he was almost 100 ahead of the next closest guy?
Wow.
Warren Spahn, who gave up 434 home runs in his career. Jamie Moyer, obviously known for his longevity. He had some very successful years, but he could not keep the ball in the ballpark. And in fact, his last four seasons with the Phillies from 2007 to 2010, he allowed 97 homers, while his strikeout total plummeted every year. So following Jamie Moyer's all-time home runs allowed record, we're going to go to number two. And number two of the worst unbreakable records in sports is going to be the Cubs' 100-year World Series-less streak. Obviously, no player or fan wants to endure something like that. I think this is actually more punishing towards the fans, to be honest. Players come and go, but fans really are forever. And so to endure something like that is really heartbreaking. Also, by the way, no one's come even close. I think the closest one is the Cleveland Indians, and they are sitting – their last championship was in 1948, if I'm correct. So it's been a while for them, but it was a long time for the Cubs before 2016. They took down the Cleveland Indians in seven games – and came back from 3-1 in the series when they won it. The last time someone came back down from 3-1 in the series to win both games 6 and 7 on the road was the 1979 We Are Family Pirates.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you got to wonder. The NFL has not been around for 100 years. The NBA has not either. You know what I mean? So, like, it's going to be a while if any franchises in those two respective leagues can even come close to even to where the Indians are now, even to, 60, 70 years. I mean, that's pretty insane.
Yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong, the Indian streak is pretty incredible as well, but the Cubs going over a century without winning I mean, there's a list. You can look at online. There's lists of things that have happened since the Cubs last won a World Series, and you could have looked that up pre-2016. But still, even before then, or even now, you can look that up. And it's interesting and kind of funny, kind of humorous to look up all the things that happened before the Cubs won another World Series.
Yeah.
But number one, and this will absolutely never, ever be broken, and that is Cy Young's 315 career losses. Guys just don't play that long anymore. They don't throw that many games. Cy Young, by the way, is also the winningest pitcher in baseball history with 512 career wins. 512, 511. Don't have the number up in front of me, but it's one of those two. But he has the most career losses at 315. Spent 22 years in the big leagues. And it's not his infancy, but kind of when it started to gain national popularity, the early 1900s, right after the turn of the century. Young only lost more than 20 games in a season just twice, but recorded double-digit losses every year. But he also started or pitched in 30 to 50 games per season. So obviously those numbers are going to inflate, that record. No one does that anymore unless you're a relief pitcher. And honestly, if you're a relief pitcher losing double-digit games a year, you're probably not going to be in the bigs that much longer.
Yeah, you're fired.
like exactly. So this is a record. His wins record will probably never be touched unless. Honestly, I don't think there's even a scenario his wins record ever gets touched. Neither his career losses record, which is what we're focusing on today. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is this week's edition of Mitch Moe's Top 5 List of the Week.
Mitch, I love it. What an interesting thing to think about. A lot of times, I think it's, you know, a conversation on which one, what's untouchable as far as, you know, the good records. You know, you think of like Cal Ripken's, you know, streak of games played. You know, I always think of John Stockton's assists, you know, in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Game changes. Some of those things can't be done. I don't often think of the ones that I wouldn't want to break, you know, and I love that. Thanks for that, Mitch. That was great.
No problem. New edition coming next week. So,
all right. So, guys, for the bulk of this show, for this last little bit, we want to talk about this upcoming NFL season. And specifically, this is the thought I had. There are 32 teams in the NFL. Turns out there's a lot of them. I'm a big fan of one of them in particular. But there are times, especially here in Utah, where I don't get to watch the Panthers play, like ever, actually. And so I'll catch myself on a Sunday morning with Fox and CBS on. There's two games going on, four different teams, and I got to decide which one I want to watch. So I was thinking about that the other day, and what teams would draw my attention that if they were on TV, it's a no-brainer. I'm watching that team play. That's obviously not the team that I love. So Mitch and I have come up with three teams that you could deem are the most interesting to us going into this season. The teams that we may go out of our way to watch even in a bad game and a bad matchup for whatever reason, whether it's because they're really good, whether it's because they're really bad, whether there's a specific player that's so exciting that we want to watch them every week. That is the topic for today. And Mitch, I'm going to let you share one. We'll kind of go back and forth sharing one here and there. What's one of the teams that you are most interested in watching this year?
Well, until the Antonio Brown news, this was one of the teams I was really excited about, and it's the Oakland Raiders.
Hey, still an interesting team.
Still an interesting team, though. I'm not going to lie. This offensive line is much improved with going from left to right here. Colton Miller, Richie Incognito, Rodney Hudson, Gabe Jackson, Trent Brown. A very solid, formidable front line. I think they had a down year. They had a lot of injuries on the up front that caused Derek Carr to be the fifth most sacked quarterback in the NFL last year. And so he's added some big weapons. Obviously, the big name of those is Antonio Brown. Hopefully, he does come back and play for this team. But Tyrell Williams comes from San Diego. A very formidable wide receiver. I actually really, really like this guy's skill set. But who I'm most excited about in this wide receiver corps is Hunter Renfrow. Overshadowed at Clemson, but has shown to be a very valuable piece in the slot. John Gruden's a huge fan of him. And I'm really looking forward to see Hunter Renfrow and what sort of role he's going to have in this offense. Right now, he is listed over Ryan Grant as the top slot wide receiver on their depth chart. So look for Hunter Renfrow to be on the field a lot. There's a lot of three wide receiver sets used on the field in today's game. So be prepared to see Hunter Renfrow as a name that is repeatedly on the field for the Oakland Raiders this upcoming season. But Dallin, I want to call you out. I want to call you out while I'm on this Raiders topic. I believe you've given me a lot of shit about being excited about the Raiders or having faith that the Raiders are rebuilding and trusting. I think I use trust the process a la the Philadelphia 76ers. I've also expressed a lot of faith in John Gruden as a head coach. A lot of faith. And I would admittedly say at some points, maybe a little bit too much faith. I will admit.
I agree.
But that does not tarnish the fact that I think this is a good head coach and I think he knows what he's doing. And when we last talked about this on the podcast, you said that he's had a year. He needs to be gone. He needs to be out of Oakland. He needs to be gone. He's had a year. I want to backtrack to when we talked about the coach firings at the end of last year, and we brought up the name Steve Wilks and how big of a Steve Wilks fan you are and how upset you were that he was fired after 1 year. And you said that 1 year is not enough for a head coach to come in and take over a system and build their own team. So, Dallin, I would like you to rebut as to why you think John Gruden should be fired after 1 year, but why you are upset that Steve Wilks was fired after 1 year.
It's really simple, Mitch. John Gruden's been a head coach before. We've seen it. We've done it. Steve, what, you can't give a guy that's brand new to the job a year to do it and then fire him. John Gruden's been there before.
When was the last time John Gruden was a coach?
It was not that long ago. And we also know how it ended.
It was before 2010.
Listen, John Gruden, as a coaching career, obviously he had some success, but he also had some years of just okay. And that's kind of how it all ended, with just some okay. And then you hire the guy back and you have the season that they did last year. Not only that, but you made the moves that you did last year. It's a different situation than just failing to coach. I mean, you traded away your two best players. Your two best players. You got rid of them.
And what did they return in? What did they return in?
I don't know. It's a great question.
You want to know what the return is for him? The return is Antonio Brown, which
exactly.
No, listen. Before today, that's a great return, right?
Or, maybe.
No, it was.
I was not as high on the Antonio Brown because you're paying him a lot of money and he's 30 years old. I like the flashy move because I don't know what else they do, but it's not like some home run. You know, it's not Odell Beckham to the Browns.
For today's news, yes, it is a home run. You're getting Antonio Brown. Yeah, no, right. The only reason you're knocking him is because you don't have faith in John Gruden or Derek Carr.
I don't. It's not Derek Carr, per se. I'm not confident in Derek Carr, but I...
No, it's not lack of faith in Antonio Brown. It's lack of faith in the guys that are going to be around him. So that's what you're...
The Raiders organization as a whole, including their head coach. It is dysfunction. Whatever it is, something goes wrong. And now we got Antonio Brown, who freezes his foot and decides he doesn't want to play football because he's got an old helmet he wants to use.
Can I finish?
Sure.
Yeah. Can I finish? Okay. All right. You're also going to free up enough cap space to go get Trent Brown. You're also going to free up enough cap space to make the trade for Tyrell Williams. You're also going to go draft Hunter Renfrow, Josh Jacobs, Clelin Ferrell, and Jonathan Abrams. That's what the return was for two guys. Two guys. I like that return. And they still have future stuff. Now, look, I'm not a Raiders fan. I'm a Raiders supporter. I'm not a Raiders fan. In fact, my Bears are the recipient of one of those Raiders trades, the biggest of those two.
And very good fortune at that, getting Khalil Mack.
But they got quite the return on this.
Listen, here's the thing. The return is hard to say.
Your
hard
hate? To say
because draft picks are draft picks. We don't know how any of these players are going to pan out. The Clelin Ferrell was pretty unanimously way too early to pick that guy. And I get it. If it's your guy, it's your guy. But I think it's safe to say that where they picked Clelin Ferrell was too early. So that one we can say, all right, you may have overpaid there. But if he's good, he's good. But we don't know if these guys are going to be good. All I know is that I don't believe in this John Gruden thing. This seemed 2 years ago. 2 years ago, this team was a Derek Carr injury away from being a Super Bowl contender. I mean, they were really, really good. And in that time, it's like they fell back to the doldrums. They were bad. All of a sudden, they have this meteoric rise with Derek Carr as a dark horse MVP candidate. And now they're back to where they began just a few years ago. And I don't know why.
And that's not John Gruden's fault.
Be wholly his fault, but I don't think the move to bring back John Gruden to the Raiders was going to elevate them to this level that they thought it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be successful. I still don't.
Well, and, of course, you can't expect it all in 1 year because they were on the decline in Jack Del Rio's last year there.
Yeah, and then they took that decline and traded away their two best players.
So are you going to try to fight going upriver? Or are you going to try to rebuild yourself?
You're telling me that what they had last year before they made those trades was bad, that they had make those trades?
Look, as
you're
much as
they were you know, declining.
Amari Cooper, I felt, was necessary. I think you needed something more reliable than Amari Cooper.
Sure. I could understand.
Khalil Mack, you know, from a purely business standpoint, and I'm going to keep my homerism out of it, from a purely business standpoint, not a smart move by the Raiders. No. That's someone who you build around, right? And we can agree on that.
100%.
Even though I was the good end of that trade. I was on the good end of that trade. Agree that was not a smart trade by the Raiders.
Yeah.
But then to flip around, look at this, and we got to move on so we can get to your guys. But you draft a young, very promising talent like Clelin Ferrell. And then your linebacker
overpaid for Clelin Ferrell. Let's be fair. He was picked at number 4. He is not the 4th best player in this draft right now. That was an overpay.
I get it. But then their linebacker core, even if he was going to play an outside linebacker, Tahir Whitehead, Vontaze Burfict, and Brandon Marshall, not a bad linebacker core.
Vontaze Burfict? The dude's going to get suspended for 6 games this year.
Yeah, he's a dick, but he's a great player.
He's going to play 10 games for you because the rest of the time he's going to be suspended. How does that help?
John Gruden has a way with over-the-top personalities. He does. Right.
Yeah, and Antonio Brown, clearly that's going well. My point is
Antonio Brown wore socks into a cryogenic chamber.
And now he won't.
And now he wants to throw a fit about what helmet he's going to wear.
Because he wants to wear a helmet.
That's in John Gruden's control. No, yeah, because that's in John Gruden's control.
You said that he has a way of controlling personalities. Well, where is his control over Antonio Brown?
Antonio Brown hasn't spent a day in camp, so how can he have control over that?
All right. The point is,
you're out of your mind.
Don't believe in this. I don't believe in the Raiders. I don't believe in John Gruden, the way it's run. I like some of these players. I was really high on the Raiders when they were making that run. I think Derek Carr could still be successful. I like some of these moves, but I don't know. I'm not there. I'm not 100% there. I can't get on the train.
You want to make a water bet?
What's this bet?
So if you go back to the fantasy footballers, they have an app, Wheel of Water, and it's different ways you get water thrown on you from a cup. We can make a water bet about the Raiders. Loser has to spin the wheel of water and get a water thrown on them in a certain fashion. Your wife could do it to you. I could find someone to do it to me. And we have to take a video and post it on Instagram.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. What is the bet?
Raiders will finish 7-9.
That's the bet? They got to go 8-8. Are you kidding me? 7-9?
I said 8-8 was their ceiling already, and you tend to think that they're at least a 5-win team, and that's what you said in that podcast we talked about. They're a 5-win team.
So if I'm going to put a bet on this, they have to at least go 500.
But you just said they're a 5-win team.
I did.
So if they finish above your expectations, I win.
No. 7-9? That's not even good. I thought we were talking about them being good, and a successful season is not 7-9.
Fine. Eight and eight.
At the very least, you could say we made a jump. Okay, at eight, if they go at least 8-8, I will spin this wheel, and if they don't, you will spin the wheel. I like it, Mitch.
Water bet. Official.
John Gruden.
Handshake.
All right. We're shaking over the video. This is great. All right, guys. Let's talk about one of the teams I'm looking forward to. A lot less controversial. In fact, it's probably number one on most people's list, and that's the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a team that got out of the doldrums.
We both wanted to talk about this team, by the way.
We did, which is great because now we could just geek out. I mean, we know the drill, guys. Everybody knows the young talent they have on both sides of the field, the addition of Odell Beckham Jr., you have Nick Chubb, you have Baker Mayfield, David Njoku, Jarvis Landry. That's just the offense. How about some Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward? How about the draft picks, Greedy Williams and Sione Takitaki? Listen, guys, the Browns are going to be fun to watch. As a BYU sports radio producer, I have an investment in the Browns because of Sione Takitaki going in the third round. I'm really high on that kid. I like him a lot. I will be watching the Browns whenever they are on TV. This is going to be a lot of fun. I don't think they're going to be as good as a lot of people think they are. I think they're still a good team. I don't know about Super Bowl, but no matter what, this is an entertaining team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's nothing not to be excited about this team. Nothing. I mean,
exactly.
And if you watch their first drive in their preseason game last night, this team is high energy, fast moving, lots of moving parts there. You can't put too much focus on one guy because someone else is going to beat you. And by the way, we're still overlooking the fact they're still pretty sound defensively.
Oh yeah.
They're still sound defensively. They may not be top tier defense, but they're still pretty good. They still will get the job done. This offense though is what we're all looking forward to. This is something to be excited about. And unfortunately, Antonio Callaway, who I have on my dynasty team, and I nicknamed him "Stay Off the Weed," and he got
suspended. And he got
suspended 4 games for substance abuse. this is still a very exciting team. This is a team to be excited about.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and they have as a backup quarterback the MVP of the AAF, Garrett Gilbert. Everyone's favorite Orlando Apollo. So, I mean, this team has something for everyone.
I didn't even mention with the Raiders, our favorite quarterback is the third string quarterback.
Nathan Peterman.
What
team saw Nathan Peterman film and was like, that's the guy I want as a backup quarterback? That just even furthers my point. Mitch, we gotta stop talking about the Raiders. What's another team you are excited about?
Probably a dark horse team. I'm really excited about the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, the other team in the Bay.
I am. I'm going to stay all on the West Coast. So, heads up, I'm staying on the West Coast. This team is actually really exciting. I love their running back depth here. Matt Breda, Tevin Coleman, and even Raheem Mostert showed some promise and a lot of talent in his limited time there. The receiver core, I'm super excited about Dante Pettis. I think this guy's going to flourish and have a breakout year. He's going to be playing opposite of Marquise Goodwin. Here's the guy to keep an eye on is Trent Taylor playing out of the slot. I think the last few years, even before we started this podcast, I said that this guy was going to be a breakout year. He hasn't quite broken out yet. But with having Jimmy G back and probably going to spread the offense out a little bit more, I think this is going to be a guy that could play really well at the slot, be a poor man's Wes Welker, Julian Edelman type, and really get the job done for them. An undersized guy with a ton of toughness and an ability to catch the football. They're good up front with Joe Staley, the future Hall of Famer. Playing opposite of him on the right tackle is Mike McGlinchey. And then they add Laken Tomlinson, another very formidable offensive lineman, in addition to having, in my opinion, the second best tight end in football, George Kittle. So that, and then having Jimmy G back for a full year is going to be a big deal. So this is a team that not only is looking top half in offense, I think. Obviously, they could slip below and underperform, but I think this is going to be a just above top half offense. This defense got a lot better. They added D Ford. You draft a guy like Nick Bosa. You add a guy like Malcolm Smith. Fred Warner is just going to get better. Then you add Quan Alexander to play the will backer. He's from Tampa Bay. Very, very successful. And I love Jaquiski Tartt, probably one of my favorite D-backs in all of football. Very exciting team. And I think could potentially put San Francisco back in the playoff picture by the end of the year. Not as a division winner. I think this is still the Rams division to lose, but could be a very, very formidable wild card team.
Yeah, the Niners are definitely a team I'm going to be watching for because we haven't got to see the Jimmy G experiment in its full form. Yeah, he played, what, maybe six games last year? Four? Not even that.
Yeah, he was out like week four, week five.
He was out pretty quick, and that was it. That was the season. And like you said, they made some big moves, adding a lot of key pieces on the defensive side of the field, Dee Ford, Quan Alexander specifically. And they have that to pair with young players on the defense like DeForest Buckner, Fred Warner, that they've been grooming for a couple years. I think this team could be pretty good. I'm right there with you. I think this could be a wild card team. I think we've forgotten offensively what Kyle Shanahan can do. And I think we're finally, hopefully, going to get a full chance to see that realized. And if it is what we think it could be, it is going to be a lot of fun. And at the very least, we'll get to see the Jimmy G experiment get a full season. And whether or not this is all going to work out for San Francisco or whether they just paid a guy a lot of money who's not very good. So I agree with you. A very intriguing team this season.
And this is going to be the year. And he had an impressive year last year, but this is going to be the year that I think he's going to be considered elite. DeForest Buckner will be an elite defensive lineman. Yeah. I think by the end of this year, he will be considered in that realm. Just because, I mean, a lot of Akeem Hicks, who I'm a big Akeem Hicks fan, obviously a Bears fan, but
right.
a big Akeem Hicks fan. There's a lot of similarities there. Big bodied, quick. And there's a lot of similarities there. I think he's going to be considered one of the elite defensive linemen in the league by season's end.
Yeah, well, and he made a big jump last year. So, he's getting close to that Pro Bowl level type guy, and I think we see that this year as well. All right, my next team, staying in the AFC North here, I had the Browns. I also have the Ravens. The Ravens made the playoffs last year on a second half led by rookie quarterback Lamar Jackson, and it was a lot of fun to watch. Now, we know what happened in the wild card weekend against the Chargers. The Chargers played a defense full of DBs that were quick and able to limit what Lamar Jackson was able to do, and he struggled. And now the Ravens have had an entire offseason to build an offense and a playbook around Lamar Jackson. Joe Flacco's gone. They shipped him to Denver. It is Lamar Jackson's team and Lamar Jackson's offense. And we are going to see, I think, the resurgence of a pure running offense, but one that we've never seen before with a quarterback like this that I think they're going to rely on the run. I'm not necessarily saying that Lamar Jackson himself is going to be getting the majority of these carries, but this offense is 100% going to be predicated on the run between him, Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards, lots of option, lots of movement. I am really intrigued to see how this works out. We know the Ravens always have a good defense. You can kind of pencil that in every year. But this offense and what they've done with the addition of Mark Ingram and a whole offseason to game plan with Lamar Jackson in mind, to me, makes this team super intriguing.
Yeah, I've been awfully critical of Lamar Jackson, especially after his playoff performance last year.
Yes, we had a very heated conversation about that.
We did. But I think this is going to be the year that he's going to prove whether he's going to be a credible NFL quarterback or not. ESPN update. There we go. I think that they want to run him a lot. I just don't know if really running this guy a lot is something that's going to be sustainable in the NFL. I think he's going to have to become a better passer, which he already is a good passer. I mean, he already is. But he's going to have to be better to meet NFL standards. And this is going to be a redemption year for me for Lamar Jackson because he left the season on such a sour note in my book. I know that you disagree with that, but he left on such a bad note with such a poor playoff performance that he really has to reestablish himself almost. And I don't know if he, I don't even know if he was really fully established. I think this is going to be the year that he really fully establishes himself as at least at the very least a serviceable quarterback.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, yeah, what we saw last year was Lamar Jackson kind of just getting thrust into the offense and them adjusting the offense as we go. You're right. We haven't seen the full coming out because they haven't had the opportunity. Now we get it. They've had the offseason. They know he's the quarterback. They shipped off the old guy. Now is, you know, the experiment of Lamar Jackson as a starting NFL quarterback. We're going to know this year, like you said, if it could work, if it doesn't, what, you know, what adjustments they need to make in personnel to make that happen. I mean, we're going to know it now. We finally get that opportunity. We saw kind of a flash in the pan kind of success with them last year. And then in the postseason, you know, clearly a way to stop him. And he got flustered and he was young and inexperienced. So this season's going to be huge for him and that team. And I'm ready to watch it. I'm ready to see how it works out.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to have to get him. They don't have a whole lot of weapons in the receiver core. I'm a big Mark Andrews fan this year. I think this guy's a very good tight end. But past, really, Hollywood Brown, they don't have a whole lot. Like, Willie Snead's, like, their number two receiver. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not solid. So they're going to have to find a way for him to get those guys the ball and put themselves in a position to be a successful team through the air. Because just having two weapons is really not going to be enough.
100%.
And then forcing him to run the ball is just eventually guys are going to catch on. So they have to get this guy in a better position to succeed through the air.
I don't think this team's going to be fantastic. I think the Ravens are going to be a good team this year. I think they're definitely a borderline playoff team. I don't think this is going to be super successful. There's definitely going to be hiccups. I think the receiving side of it, the passing offense is definitely a question mark, and that needs to get figured out. All right, Mitch, what's your final team?
So my final team is, when you look at the depth chart, nothing really too exciting except for two names, Murray and Johnson. And I'm going to go with the Arizona Cardinals. What really is exciting to me is not a name that's on the depth chart. It's Cliff Kingsbury. He's bringing that air assault offense over from Texas Tech. He's revitalizing this offense, and I think he has the guy. He's in the right situation to try to rebuild that, to build that around Kyler Murray. The receiver core is nothing impressive. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald is 36, going to be 36 years old. Backing him up is Andy Isabella, a rookie. Christian Kirk, going to be a second-year guy. Showed a lot of promise, but not a whole lot proven yet. Kevin White has been a former Chicago Bear, has had a lot of injury issues, has not stayed healthy. Other than Murray and Johnson, that's what you have to look forward to, and that doesn't seem exciting. But that Kingsbury offense is something to get excited about, to kind of spread them out, kind of a new age run and shoot type team. That's utilizing the speed of his players and getting them into space is something I'm going to be very excited about. And I really think that Christian Kirk is going to play a big role in this offense. I think he's going to prove to be a very serviceable receiver. The big question mark is defense. There's a lot of age and there's a lot of unproven talent there. And that's where really, except for Budda Baker, is really the one young talent there that everyone's going to recognize. Other than that, not a whole lot of big names, and then a lot of age. Like I said, Terrell Suggs, Patrick Peterson, DJ Swearinger, Chandler Jones, all guys that are kind of on the back end of their career. It's going to take a lot of proving defensively. I think this is going to be a high-scoring offense, and that Cliff Kingsbury offense, from what I've seen so far, but not a whole lot to look forward to on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals are not going to be good this year, but that does not mean they won't be interesting. And I 100% am with you. I think Kyler Murray and Kingsbury, that duo, is going to be must-watch TV every week. And some weeks, I think it's just going to be on, and that team is going to score, and it's going to be fast, and it's going to be fun to watch. And some weeks, it's gonna be nothing. Nothing's going to work, and it's going to be ugly to watch. But I would 100% have the Arizona Cardinals on my teams to watch this year list, because we've never seen something like this. This is the first true introduction of the college air raid offense into the NFL. And Kyler Murray seems like the perfect candidate to make this happen. So I am intrigued too. And I think this is going to be really not a good team, but an interesting team.
I think last year what I said about David Johnson was that he had the potential to be a 1,000 and 1,000 guy. Obviously, under Mike McCoy, that was never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But under this Cliff Kingsbury offense, he has a serious opportunity to do it if he plays well.
100%.
So this is going to be I'm going to make a bold prediction that David Johnson will be their leader in receptions by the end of the year.
I was going to say he may be their best receiver on the team, and that's with Larry Fitzgerald. And no disrespect to Larry Fitzgerald, one of the greatest of all time, but
he's 36.
But David Johnson may be their best receiver, and they are going to use him like a receiver.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just coming out of the backfield, just going to line him up in a different spot. That's all they're going to do.
Yep. All right, my final team is headed by another young quarterback. Most of these teams we've had, in fact, all of them, maybe besides the Raiders and the Niners, are kind of – you know, focused around a young quarterback, a young, interesting talent. And my team that I am going to be watching this year is the Houston Texans. The Texans had a lot of success last season early on, dipped off in the second half, ultimately lost in the first round of the playoffs to the Colts. But they have Deshaun Watson, who is one of the most exciting young quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And I think this may be weird because the hype coming out of year one was insane, what we saw him do in those 6 to 8 games. I think he's a little underrated now. I think people have kind of forgotten the talent of Deshaun Watson, because Houston, yes, was good last year, but they went out in the playoffs, and he didn't have a great second half. He was sacked, I think, the most times in NFL history. It was kind of an ugly team despite their success. I think people are kind of forgotten what makes Deshaun Watson special. And I see a leap for him this season. He has DeAndre Hopkins. He has Kiki Kuti. He has Will Fuller. They just added Duke Johnson, a great receiving back who will complement Lamar Miller perfectly. I think the Texans are going to be a lot of fun to watch. That defense is solid. J.J. Watt, always entertaining. If he could be healthy, that would help. But Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, this is a good team, and they will continue to be a good team this year. But I think Deshaun Watson is going to make a jump. He's somebody I will be paying attention to this season, and I do think he's being a little undervalued right now.
Was he really the most sacked quarterback of all time?
I know they led the NFL in sacks last season, the Texans. I think it was quite a bit, and I don't know the number. But
oh, I got it right here. There we go. It was 68 times. He's on pace to be sacked 68 times. Let me look something up. Yeah, he was sacked 62 times last year. The record still held by David Carr. Derek Carr's brother. Derek Carr.
The poor Texans. They've always had bad offensive lines.
Yeah. He was sacked a lot. More than he should have been.
That is a ridiculous amount. That's like 6 times a game.
Yeah. No, it's pretty bad. But I don't know if he's still – I don't know if he's underrated. I don't know if he's underrated. I think he's rated right about where he should be, which is still a good quarterback, but not elite. So he's not in that conversation yet, but he's still like in that list of good quarterbacks, probably in the Matt Ryan conversation, in the Matt Stafford conversation, the good quarterbacks that don't really get a whole lot done outside of the regular season. But, yeah, this team has a lot to be excited about, and I think adding Duke Johnson is just going to free up Lamar Miller more. It adds another dimension to Deshaun Watson's game. He has a guy he could throw to out of the backfield, because Lamar Jackson is quite honestly not the greatest receiving back. And it's going to take a little pressure off of Hopkins and QT. So I think that this is a team that's going to be – that's going to have success. I think in our way too early NFL predictions, I think I had them at over 500 but not winning the division and missing the playoffs. But it's the offensive line of play has got to get better in Houston for Deshaun Watson to be successful there.
Yeah, I just think after that rookie season, what we saw him do in that short amount of time, we were super high. Everybody was super hyped on him. And then Mahomes and Mayfield happened last year, and it's like we forgot about Deshaun Watson. And he didn't have, like, a fantastic season last year, no doubt. But when you take into consideration the fact that he was sacked 62 times and that team was still successful, that was still a playoff team – I think we're just kind of forgetting about him. That we're in a society now where we want the next thing and we move on, and then it's the next thing and we move on. And I think he's kind of a guy that you're not thinking about, and I think people should be thinking about him, and specifically they should be paying attention to him.
And you know what? And I'll err on the side that he is underrated, because like you just said, he didn't have a fantastic season last year. He actually had a really good season. 68.3% completion percentage, 26 touchdowns and 9 picks.
Yeah.
He was just sacked 62 times.
Right. And he wasn't Patrick Mahomes. He didn't throw for 50 touchdowns. He wasn't Baker Mayfield. He didn't turn around the, you know, it's just like he had a great season, like you said, but just forgotten. And I think people should pay attention this year. I think he makes a leap. He will be a borderline bold prediction. Mitch, you always do bold predictions. It's my turn. Deshaun Watson will be a Pro Bowl quarterback this season.
Wow.
I'm saying it now. Houston's going to have success. He's going to have success. He's making the Pro Bowl.
So let me ask you something. If they make the stars align and they make a lot of things go right and they make a deep playoff run, do you think he's an MVP candidate?
I mean, if he's having a Pro Bowl level season and they are one of the top teams in the AFC, sure. I don't see why it couldn't happen. We saw the leap that a Patrick Mahomes, Mahomes didn't make a leap. He jumped in the pool and was already there. But we've seen those kind of young players make these huge steps. I don't see why Deshaun Watson, with what he's shown us already in the NFL, why he couldn't be that guy to make a huge leap. And all of a sudden it's like Deshaun Watson, is he up there with these guys? I really don't think that's impossible.
No. Yeah. And I mean, he actually showed improvement from year to year. He was actually on pace to do something about to do the same that he did in his age 22 year, in 2017, he just got hurt.
Right.
And he was actually on pace to do something and actually probably play a little bit better than he actually did, a little bit more. The interception rate ratio was a little bit high, was actually substantially higher, by 2%, but his touchdown percentage ratio was down by 4% from the year before to last year. So yeah, this is a good quarterback, and you might be right. He might be a little bit undervalued coming into this year. And I am excited about this Texans team. I'm excited to see what they can do.
All right, guys, that is it for our most interesting teams this season. Like we said, next week, next episode will be a megasode NFL preview. We'll give you our records predictions. We'll break down every team. That's the big one. We'll give you that. And then before the season starts, we'll also give you awards predictions, MVPs, rookie of the year, etc. We're going to give you everything. Mitch, is there anything else before we wrap up this pod?
Not a whole lot. I want to thank the followers that stuck with us on Instagram through our little hiatus here. We are going to be getting back on the air. We're going to be getting back at it. And guys, get on there. We'll post about this episode coming out. I want you to get in the comments and make suggestions about what this year's punishment should be for our quick picks. Last year I had to shave my head all the way down to the scalp. Maybe we'll make it a thing. Maybe one of us can go out to Utah or come back out to California for the Super Bowl and make something like that happen again, so that you can see it live happen, the punishment on Super Bowl Sunday. But get in the comments and let us know what you think the punishment for this year's quick picks should be. I'm looking forward to the quick picks, bud. We picked really well last year. I think maybe a little bit of fluke, maybe not. Maybe we're just Nostradamuses when it comes to football.
I think we're just pretty good at it. Yeah, I'm excited for this too. I'm just excited for football season to be here, to be doing this podcast, to, you know, weekly sit down, talk about football. And guess what? Baseball postseason coming up quick. Guess what's also coming up? NBA regular season. We just had the craziest offseason NBA history. I mean, there's so much going on and so much to look forward to. It's time to get this back rolling, and it is fun to be here. Mitch Grave, the Instagram earlier today, at the Sports Hour guys on Instagram. Follow it for the content. The Twitter is at Sports Hour guys. We're here, and we're going to be at this. Be a part of the show. Leave us comments. Give us suggestions, questions, whatever you want, because we don't do this just for him, for me and Mitch. We do this for the listeners as well.
That's right. And you get on there and tell us we suck. It's the only way we can get better.
The only way we can get better, Mitch.
I've said it since day one. That's the only way we can get better.
All right, guys. We will catch you next week.
See ya.